Okay, everybody, we'll ask everyone to please find your seats. Okay, Parshat Vayera, everyone. Parshat Vayera is, of course, the second of the Parshiot that deal with Avraham and his family. Powerful, powerful events in Parshat Vayera. Avraham has three encounters with HaKadosh Baruch Hu of a very different nature. The first is his encounter with the Malachim, the angels, then the encounter and the debate concerning Sodom and Amorah, and then eventually the encounter concerning the Akedah. But we're going to do something a little bit different. We're going to take a look at an ancillary figure in the patriarchal era to start with, and then we're going to try to compare his behavior to Abraham's, similar to the way we compared Noach to Abraham last week. Ancillary means a less significant figure, someone who seems not to be that significant in the story. And the reason for that is that I believe that we can learn a very significant lesson from his journey. And the person I'm referring to is Lot, the nephew of Avraham. Let's briefly review his story, and then we're going to look at the climax of his story, which is a very upsetting portion of the text, and then we're going to try to understand what the Torah is telling us about him. Lot is Abraham's nephew. He travels with Abraham from Haran and continues to travel with him until there is a dispute between the shepherds of Lot and the shepherds of Abraham in Parshas Lech Lecha last week. Abraham turns and says, let's not have a situation where we have continual fighting between ourselves. And let's split. Let's go to different places. Abram says, you go left, I'll go right. And Lot, the Torah tells us, sees the fertile plain of the Yarden, which at now is the area around the Dead Sea. But at that point, according to the text, was a fertile, fertile area, the area around Sodom and Amorah, the cities. He travels to Sodom. He is ultimately taken captive by the enemies of Sodom in a war. Abraham runs to save him, and Lot goes back to Sodom. And then the event that we're looking at to open our class begins. And this is, as I said, a very, very, very upsetting section of text. And we're going to try to look at it, understand it a little bit, and then see what it might be teaching us. Picture for a moment that the three Malachim who visit Avraham at the beginning of Parshas Vayera, two of them now come to visit Lot. The third has finished whatever his task is. By the way, that's another whole other discussion. What are angels and how do we view them? But what's for our purposes, to simply summarize, angels are expressions of God's will, whether they are actual beings, whether they are visions. The rabbis dispute, but they are, whatever they are singular expressions of God's will. Each angel has one task, and one task alone. They have no free will, according to Chazal. They can't make choices. And when an angel's task is over, the angel ceases to exist. So they are simply expressions of God's will, perhaps to bridge the huge gap between an unimaginable God and mortal man, and to express God's will in the world. Two of those angels then travel to Lot. And if you look at the first line on the page before you, on page one, Vayavo shnei amalochim sedoma b'erev, v'lot yoshev b'shar sedom. They come, the angels come in the evening, and Lot is sitting in the gates of Sodom. Lot runs to greet them and bows down to them. You with me, everybody? Wrong sheet? Okay. Lot bows down and greets them, and he says, please come, and we'll summarize this. He says, please come, be guests in my house, please come and stay with me. The angels first demur, they say no. Lot continues to beg, please stay with me. The angels come into the house, and in sentence four, Terem Yishkavu, the underlined sentence, Bianche or Iranche Sodom Nasobu al Habayis. Right? So this is Sodom. Sodom hates strangers. Sodom does not want strangers in their midst. Sodom hears that Lot has taken in two strangers, and what do? They surround the house, and they say to Lot, send out those strangers, vinnade all some, and we'll do what we want with them. Well, Lot, amazingly, turns to them and says, no, please do not do this. Don't do this. I promised these strangers protection. And in sentence eight says, And Lot, horrifically, says to these Sodomites, don't hurt the strangers. I have two virgin daughters. I'll take them out to you, and you do as you see fit. You do what you want to them. Now let's just stop there for a second. How do you understand that kind of behavior in anybody? In anybody? Well, maybe by the end of the class we will. All right? But it's secondly, what is the Torah teaching us by including this event in the text? Like, I'm sure there are all sorts of various things happening in the world at this time, and two load of others, whatever. Anything that's in the Torah is there to tell us something, to tell us a lesson, to teach us something. What could the lesson possibly be from Lot and his behavior in this particular instance? So I'm going to suggest to you that the way to understand this event, and thus the way to understand why the Torah tells us about Lot in the first place, we have to back up. And this is one of my favorite shiurim because it's another example of how the text, when you look at it carefully enough, tells you something, but you have to be very aware. You have to spend time looking. In this case, we're going to look at a series of sentences that are chapters apart from each other. And we're going to see a very interesting journey. Let's go back. Let's turn to page number two. Just flip to the other side. And we're going back now in time to where Lot and Avraham part ways. We're going now to where Avraham and Lot part ways. And Avraham turns, right, and says to Lot, it's not in your text, says to Lot, you go right, I'll go left. We can't travel together. The land cannot support the both of us together. You pick where you want to go. Your choice, Lot. So the Torah tells us, Vayisa Lot Esenov, Lot lifts his eyes. Vayar is called Kikara Yarden Kikula Mashke. He sees the fertile land, again, around what is now the Dead Sea, but it wasn't at that point. And he decides to go. He decides to go to that fertile place. And in sentence 12, we see a fascinating sentence. Avraham, first sentence 11 first, Vayivchar lo Lot is called Kikara Yarden, he chooses the Jordan plain. Vayisa lo Mikenem, he travels from the east, all sorts of interpretations, Medrashic here, but we'll just take Pashat Shad, he goes from the east, Vayipardu ish me'alochiv, they separate. And sentence 12, Va'avram Yoshav be'eretz Kanan, Velot Yoshav be'orei hakikar, Vaye'ehal ad Sodom. All right? Avraham lives in the land of Canaan. Lot chooses to live in the Orei HaKikor, the cities of the plain. Vaye'ehal, what's the word Vaye'ehal? He tents ad Sodom. So let's stop there for a moment because we're going to now talk about something that's going to be a foundation in all of our studies. And that is the Torah usually uses one of two words to talk about someone living somewhere. What are the two words? Vayagar and Vayeshev. Those are the two normative words used in the Torah text to talk about. What's the difference between the two? The other way. Lagur, right, remember, right. Lagur is impermanent. It comes from the word ger. All right, it comes from the word stranger. So whenever the Torah is telling you that someone is Vayogar Yitzchak be'eretz Kanaan, what the Torah is telling us is that Yitzchak, although he's the only patriarch never to leave the land of Israel, he never lives comfortably in the land. There's something always happening internally or externally to make him uncomfortable. Vayeshev Yaakov, you're living permanently, you're living comfortably. So those are the two words that are used to describe, and here we see them used. Here we see Avram Yoshav Eretz Kanaan. Avram, his permanent place is going to be the land of Canaan, and Lot's place is Are HaKikor. But Vaye'ehal Ad Sidon. So what strikes you about that phrase? And what might it be telling us about Lot? Okay, so let's dissect it. Yes. It does, yeah. Vaye'ehal Ad Sidon. What's my relationship with Sidon? So let's take a look at the words. Vaye'ehal means I'm not there permanently. Vaye'ehal, I'm tenting. Ad Sidon. The word ad is also very telling. Because the word ad, halachically, and theoretically, philosophically, is an internally ambivalent or ambiguous word. What do I mean by that? Every time you use the word ad, halachically, the rabbis ask a question. Does anyone know what the question is? Ad vi ad bichlal or ad v'lo ad bichlal, right? Up to can mean one of two things, the rabbis say. Up to can mean up to and including that, or up to and not including that. So if, for example, if the halacha is that you can have a sukkah ad 20 amos, so the rabbis ask, what does that mean? Does it mean that your sukkah is kosher at only at 19.99999, or is 20 kosher as well? And in each case, the rabbis will tell you what we mean here is ad v'ad bichlal, or ad v'lo ad bichlal, right? So what is the Torah telling me about Lot? How does he relate to Sodom at this particular moment? He's not building a house yet, right? He is extremely ambivalent about this. Why? The next line in the Torah tells you. And again, the Torah is telling you, it only gives you information you need to know. What's the next sentence? V'anshei Sodom ra'im v'chatoyim la'shem yot. So what is his tension? His tension is, wow, look at that city. It's rich, it's powerful, it's strong. But it's what? Evil. It's evil. So what am I going to do? I'm attracted to Sodom. I'm attracted to what's there. I'm not going to go away, but I'm going to tent and I'm going to play, and some of you will date yourselves, the hokey pokey. One foot in and one foot out. Right? I'm not sure what I can live in. I can live in the shadow of Sodom. Is really what he's saying. I can live in the shadow of Sodom, and be okay. So that's the first phrase that talks about Lot's relationship to the city, his initial relationship coming, as he does from the house of Avraham, right? Coming as he does from what is a moral, upstanding home, I can continue to be Lot, I can continue to be myself and live in the shadow of Sodom, and I'll, you know, day by day, I'll determine where I'm going to be. A chapter later, Lot is taken captive in a war. I told you there's a war between the king of Sodom and his allies, and Kedar LaOmer and his allies, and Sodom loses the war at that, or the battle. And Lot and his entire family are taken captive. And the Torah tells us how this happens. It's the second paragraph on page 2, or second line on page 2. Vayikhu eslot, v'esruhu sho ben achi Avram vayelehu. They take Lot, they take him captive, and they go. V'hu yoshev, finish the line, bistom. Now wait a minute. The Torah, I know that Lot's by Sodom. Why is the Torah telling me v'hu yoshev bistom? So what's it telling me now? Ah, correct. All right, there's been a transition. Here, Lot began as Vayehal ad Sodom, and now it's what? I'm in Sodom, and I've moved into Sodom. I'm comfortable living in, and it's Yoshev. It's not Vayogar. It's not Vayehal. It's I am living in Sodom. Then, in this case, five chapters later, the first line of that. Of the event that we began with. Vayavo shnei hamalochim Sodoma ba'erev, v'lot yoshev b'sha'ar Sodom. The two malochim come to Lot, and where is Lot sitting? Who sat in the gates? Shoftim, leaders, right? You say it when you say Eishes Chayil, right? No da b'sha'orim ba'ala b'shivto im ziknei aretz. Her husband is known in the gates where he sits among, the elders of the land. If you go up to Tel Dan, and I'm sure maybe you see it in other routes, but there's an ancient city, and I remember the tour guide saying that as you walk into the city and you sort of make a left turn, there's an area right there in the gates, and you can see that's where the shoftim sat, that's where the elders sat, so that the court was there. It was the face of the city to the outside world. It was the first people you met. This was the government. So what happened to Lot? It's amazing, right? Here's a man who begins, Vayehal ad Sodom, right? And by the time you get to this event, you are seeing a man who what is no longer not only living in Sodom, but an integral part of the society and its leadership. Now, let's go to the event. Lot says to the people, don't mistreat my guests. Here are my daughters. Okay? Now, again, how do we understand this? Well, who is he emulating when he says, don't mistreat my guests? And who is he emulating when he says, here are my daughters? Sodom. What you see here is Lot's journey coming home to roost. Because what did Lot feel when he, Vayehal ad Sodom? I can continue to be Avraham's nephew in Sodom. You know what? It's going to work. I'm going to be okay. They're not going to change me. They're not going to touch me. I can live in this city. I can live here. And I can retain my morality. And I'll do it step by step. And step by step, he begins to whittle away until you get to what is an aberration. Because there's no other way to understand that behavior. It is a man who is trying to reconcile two irreconcilable philosophies. Right? That's how you understand this. What's happening here is you see a man who is desperately trying to hold on to his past and desperately trying to say, I am Avram's nephew, I'm Avram's nephew, I'm not going to change, but has been so changed without his full awareness by Sodom, that what? This is what you end up with. This is what you end up with. And that's what the Torah is teaching us. And what the Torah is teaching us is that in our journey through life and in our journey through history, there will be times where we will meet with such worlds that are so irreconcilable to our Judaism that you will not be able to live there. You will be changed. My argument with you is that Avraham, the stronger of the two personalities, would have never lived in the shadow of Sodom. Because Avraham would have been wise enough to know his own humanity and weakness. He would be wise enough to know, which is what Lot doesn't recognize, that no one can live in that kind of environment and not be subtly changed. Now, that's the famous story that of one of Elie Wiesel's beautiful vignettes. He says there, he tells a story of a just man who comes, and he says a just man comes to Sodom. And this just man, and the first day he arrives, he begins to preach in the streets. And he screams and he yells and he says, "You're evil," and change and change and change and change. And this goes on for 1 year and 2 years and 3 years and 5 and 10 and 20 and 30. Finally, you get to 30 years, a little kid comes up to this man and says, "You're out of your mind. You've been screaming for 30 years. Why are you still screaming?" And the man says, "When I first came here, I was screaming because I thought I could change them. Now I'm screaming to stop them from what? Changing me." All right? And that's exactly why I believe this story is found in the text. Now let's contrast that. All right? And this story, again, Parshat HaShavua, this story, what we've had until now, unfolded in Parshiot Lech Lecha and Vayera. In other words, the journey of Lot to this point. And by the way, the journey doesn't end. What happens after that is that Lot is saved with his daughters. His daughters then believe that the world is ending. They get their father drunk. They have relations with him. And that gives birth to two nations, to Ammon and Moab, who become the enemies of the Jewish people. And yet Ruth comes. By the way, that's another story. You know, we live in a world of shiduchim and all sorts of issues of yichus. The yichus of Mashiach comes partially from that event. You would probably have thrown out his resume if it was a shidduch resume. So it reminds us that there's such a thing as yichus atzmo, and we should be more concerned about that. But that's in a whole nother discussion. Now let's take a look at Avraham. Avraham, next week in Parshas Chayei Sarah, and we'll return to this event a little bit next week as well in a different way, confronts the people around him in order to purchase what? Ma'arat HaMachpelah, right? In the beginning of Parshas Chayei Sarah actually marks a retreat on the part of Avraham to his own family. And we'll see why next week, perhaps. And two things happen in Parshas Chayei Sarah. The first is two major things. The first is he buys a plot of land for a grave for Sarah. And the second is he sends Eliezer to go find a wife for Yitzhak. Now take a look. It's found on the bottom of your pages here. The contrast. All right? And it's page 2 in Hebrew and 3 in English. I only have one page, but it's 3 in English. Now, I'm going to ask you to do something. I'm going to ask you to just very, very quickly read those paragraphs. Read either the paragraph in Hebrew or English, whatever is most comfortable for you. But do me a favor, try to read it as if you're seeing it for the first time. It's very hard. But try to read it as if you're seeing it for the first time. Okay, now I'm going to ask you, what is the first question you ask when you look at this section? Oh, no, we're not reading that section. We're reading the section with Avraham now, buying Ma'arat HaMachpelah. Okay, right. No problem. What's the first question you would ask looking at this? Huh? How much did it cost? Okay, all right, that's a good question, all right? Yeah. Why does he insist on paying? Okay.
Why did he want that particular land?
Good. Why did he want that particular land? Excellent. Okay. All right. So the Medrash will tell you because it's where Adam and Chava are buried. But I'm not, you know, pashut pshat. Maybe he's living in the area. It's a double cave. I've got a different question. Why does the Torah dedicate 21 sentences to this negotiation? Right? There are more sentences concerning this event than the Akedah. In other words, there's more text on this event than the Akedah. Now, if I would have, Chaviyachol, let's say you or I would have written this whole thing, we could have done it in what, three sentences?
Indisputable.
Huh?
Indisputable.
Okay, so one answer is it's unfortunately being disputed, but it's indisputable, right? It's certainly ironic that the one place that the Torah talks about that clearly is bought by Avraham Avinu is the flashpoint, one of the flashpoints for such strife and disagreement concerning its ownership, right? What else? Why else would the Torah dedicate so much space to this? What, I'm sorry? It must be, but why, right? To honor the dead. That's another answer given by Chazal, correct? This is this. Okay. Okay, good. And to put those two together, in many communities, do you know what this Shabbos becomes? The Chevra Kadisha Shabbos, right? This is where honor to the dead and how you treat the dead is reflected in this parsha. It's the first case. You see how hard Avram is working. Why else might it tell us this?
Sets a precedent
in terms of burial. Good, excellent, correct. It's teaching us that. What?
Honest dealing.
Okay, right. In other words, I want to be clear, and the rabbis will say, be like Avram, who says a little and does a lot, as opposed to Ephron, who says a lot and does a little, right? Because he says, I'll give it to you, and then he charges him top dollar. I'll take two more suggestions.
Ownership of the land,
right? That correct, that it's ours.
Nature.
I'm sorry, all right, take a both now. Yeah, go ahead. Ah, okay, good. The nature, I'm going to come back to that, okay? And in addition to all the, by the way, all of the suggestions you've made are suggestions that are made, pat yourselves on the back, are suggestions that are made by Chazal as to why this is such an important section. Different interpretations by different scholars. There's one additional one, and then the one that we'll focus on. One additional one is that it shows Avram's emuna. Here is a man who has been told since he left Haran, what? This land is going to belong to you. And at the end of his life, what does he have to do? He has to pay for a kever. Right? In other words, the land's not his. And in fact, later on, Hashem will turn to Moshe Rabbeinu in Parshas Va'era, and say to him, and Moshe's turning to God at that point and saying, what did you send me back to Egypt for? All I'm doing is making things worse. And God says, Va'era, I showed myself to the patriarchs. And one of the things the rabbis say is, Chaval al di'am tonda lo mishtachin. Hashem is saying to Moshe, I miss the patriarchs. I promised them all sorts of things, and they believed in me even though it didn't come true. And Moshe, the first misstep that you have, the first stumble, and you're already complaining. So it's one interpretation of that conversation. No, it's the other way. It's thank you for asking. It shows his emuna in that in order to get this land, he has to pay for it. Meaning, Hashem promised it to me, but he promised it to my children. If I don't have emuna, I'm going to say to Hashem, show it to me. Give me the land. Show me that at the end of my life, I shouldn't have to struggle to buy a piece of land. But nonetheless, he still has emuna that one day his children will inherit the land, even though he himself is not. No, it's the fact that he needs to do a purchase. The fact shows his emuna that I believe, Hashem, your promise that you'll give my children the land, even though I'm not seeing it. Even though I'm not seeing it. Yes. Well, that's an interesting... I'll have to look up the halacha and see... I'll have to take a look. All right. I'll take a look. Yes. Okay. All right. I don't want to get too off track, but I'll take two comments. Yes.
I have to negotiate.
Okay. Good.
Otherwise, it's going to go...
It doesn't go.
Okay, good, 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 good. Excellent. Yes, I'm gonna follow up on those comments. Yes. Okay. Well, that certainly is accurate to the extent that every promise God gives concerning the land, He basically says your children will have to inherit it. They'll have to conquer it. You've got to do something to get it. So it certainly falls in with that. Right. No, it's not abnormal, but if God's been promising me all my life, this is the land I'm going to give to you, this is the land I'm going to give to you, then the fact that I, at the end of my life, still have to buy a plot of land, as opposed to just simply saying, you know what, God gave it to me, it's mine, shows a degree of emunah in God's promises. All right.
Buying is conquering?
Buying is conquering. What it means is I'm doing something to acquire. Now, but stop. Because I believe personally that all of these are true, but that there's an even deeper reason that this paragraph is being told to us. And that deeper reason is actually captured in two words. Two words. You need to see it. Take a look at sentence three. Start with three and four and five. Vayokum Avram me'al p'nei meso. Avraham arose from eulogizing Sarah and mourning for Sarah. Vayedaber el b'nei ches lemor. He speaks to the assembled people of b'nei ches. And the Torah is creating the scene, which is a fascinating scene. Apparently, there's a crowd here, right? There are he's not addressing one person. He's not saying, I want to go buy this land from Ephron. He's saying he's addressing the community. And what does he say? Ger vitoshav anochi imachem. Tenu li achuzas keber imachem, ve'ekberam me'si milfonai. Ger vitoshav, I'm a ger vitoshav together with you. Give me an achuzas keber, so it should be mine, and ekberam me'si milfonai, and I will bury my dead from before me. Two words that Avram uses to describe himself towards the end of his life as he addresses the people surrounding him. Ger Vitoshav. Now, what's the matter with that phrase? It's inherently contradictory, right? Let's go back to what we said. We said there are two ways to describe living in the land, and they are vastly different. One is ger, and one is toshav, right? I'm either a stranger or I'm a citizen. How am I a ger v'toshav? So the rabbis look at this and they say, well, there are various ways to understand it. I was a ger when I came, and now I'm a toshav. If you insist that I be a stranger, I'll be a stranger, but if you let me, I'll be a toshav. But I always understood it differently, and then afterwards, Baruch Hashem, I saw Rav Soloveitchik, a piece where Baruch Shekivanti, he also speaks this way. This is one of those phrases in the Torah, and these are my words, not his. Anything you don't like, it's mine. Ger v'toshav is a dialectic. Dialectic. The Rav always used that word. I was a student of his. Dialectic means two opposites creating a tension, creating a balance. I'll give you two other examples. Ezer kenegdo, right? God creates an Ezer keneged, all right? So what does that mean? Ezer means Ezra, keneged means opposite. So the rabbis will say, Zocha Ezer lo Zocha kenegdo. If you merit it, you'll be together. But no. Ezer kenegdo is the best definition of a healthy marriage I can think of. What is an Ezer kenegdo? It's an individual who remains an individual, who has their own identity and not will always agree with their mate. Ezra, coming together for Ezra, and you have this tension. I don't know about you, but those of you who are married like me, I always agree with my wife, right? No, all right? So the fact is that Ezer kenegdo is the way it should be. All right, I'll give you another dialectic. Hashem puts man in Gan Eden, li'avdo lishamro, to work it and to guard it, to preserve it. All right? So what is man's relationship to the world that we forget at our own peril? Right? I'm supposed to work it. I'm supposed to develop it. I'm supposed to mine it. I'm la'avdo. But at the same time, what? Lishamro. Right? And now we have this whole issue now of what are we doing to the globe and what are we doing to the world and have we forgotten that balance? Ger v'toshav is a dialectic. It is the best description of the Jew sociologically across history that I can think of. Avraham, the progenitor of the Jewish people, turns to Bnei Ches at the end of his life and says, okay, guys, this is what I am. This is what I am. Now, having traveled and gone through the experiences I've gone through, I am a ger v'toshav. Give me the opportunity and I will be a citizen of your country. I will rise to the top. I will contribute in any way that I can that within my means. I'll become a vice presidential candidate. I'll become a whatever you want. Unfortunately, in our case, a presidential candidate today. All right, but I don't want to get involved in politics. But the fact is, I will become whatever you want. But at the same time, I am a what? I'm a ger. I have my limits. I will retain my own identity. I will retain who I am, and I need to define that. And what's fascinating here, if you really think about it, is that this brings Avraham's journey full circle. Because the rabbis say that Lech Lecha is itself a dialectic. Lech Lecha, God says to Avraham, go, right? Separate yourself from your background. But at the same time, the rabbis say, you know what the commandment of Lech Lecha was? It was like a small jar of perfume in the corner of the room that if it sits there, nobody benefits from. So God is telling Avraham to travel so that everyone will benefit from his thinking. So what does that mean? Lech Lecha is a dialectic. It's separate yourself from what you need to separate yourself. Be part of and apart from at the same time. That's the balance. That's the balance. And here you have it towards the end of Avraham's life. God had to tell him in the beginning, Lech Lecha. But towards the end of his life, without God saying a word to him, what is he doing? He's looking at his society and he says, this is who I am. I don't need God to tell me anymore. I now understand it. And we'll see, by the way, next week how this is a significant lesson that's partially based on some missteps that happened earlier. He basically says, I am a ger v'toshav. Look at the next sentence. Vaya'anu v'nei cheses Avram le'mor lo. All right? So the entire group, right, says to him, there must have been a spokesman, but it's not one person speaking. It's someone speaking for the entire society. Shma'enu Adoni. Listen, O Master. Nisi Elokim ata betochenu. You are a prince of God in our midst. B'mivchar kivarenu kvar esmei sechel. In the best of our graves, bury your dead. Ish mimenu es kivro. Language is very clear. No one will hold back his grave. Meaning what? It'll still belong to him, right? Nobody will stop you from praying. Now, in your words, what are Bnei Ches saying to Avraham? At first, it looks like they're being really nice, right? Right, they're saying using their graves. What are they saying to him? What are you hocking us a chinik for? If they had Yiddish expression, right? What are you saying, this Nisav? Ger v'toshav? You're not a ger v'toshav. Nisi Elokim ata bitochenu. What does that mean? You are one of us. You have to live on the edge. You have to be a ger betoshav. You have to argue that you need to be a stranger. What, you need your own cemetery? You need your own burial plot? You don't have to do that. B'mivchar kvarenu kvaris meisel. In the best of our graves, bury your dead. Our graves. Exactly. Exactly. What seems to be a very welcoming, wonderful, we're going to be nice to you, is actually throwing down the gauntlet. At this point, a battle is joined. A battle is joined between Avraham on the one side saying, Ger v'toshav, and between society on the other hand saying, what, you need to be different? You need to have your own grave? And if this battle, and this is one of those cases, you know, where a quiet conflict is being joined, that if it would have turned out differently, you and I wouldn't be sitting here today. If this conversation would have ended differently, we'd all be Hittites. And I don't know any Hittites today. Right? That's really what it comes down to. And now read the rest of the sentence, the rest of the paragraph, because what you see is there is a phrase that keeps repeating itself. Le'enei b'nei ches, lifnei b'nei ches. It's, what's the Torah telling you? That this thing is unfolding, this conversation, even when Ephron is talking to Amram, right? What does Ephron say? Vayidaber el Ephron in Yud Gimel, Avram says, "Be oznei b'nei ches," right? And that's because Avram is saying it to the ears of b'nei ches, because Ephron in sentence 11 said, "Le'enei b'nei ami nisati olucha, nisati olucha kvar meisencha." I'm giving it to you in front of everybody, right? So again, it seems that he's saying, "I'm giving it to you in front of everybody, so nobody will argue." But the subliminal, or the what's running beneath the surface, is, "Hey, Avraham, okay, we're going to see. Everyone is going to see. Are we going to win? Are you going to win? Or are you going to lose? Are you going to be able to retain your identity? Are you going to be able to keep it, or are you going to assimilate?" And I believe that that's why the Torah. One of the reasons that the Torah is dedicating 21 psukim to what could have been written in three lines. Because the Torah wants us to see, and the Torah is telling us that definition of ger v'toshav, by the way, where you draw your line, right? How much of a stranger you are societally, and how much of a citizen defines the mode of Judaism that you choose to be part of, right? My son, who is a Haredi, one of my children, basically is saying, "I'm choosing to be more of a ger than a toshav, than my parents were," right? I'm choosing to, in this balance, because I feel that the world is dangerous enough to my children, that I'm going to retreat. And he'll tell you that that's part of what he's doing. My other children, or who, you know, each in their own way. And by the way, I say, personally, I don't know how all of you parents deal with changes in your children's behavior, but I say there's a river with lots of different currents. And as long as they're in the river, I'm okay. The current they choose is the current they choose. But so the point is that the others, someone who's a modern Orthodox Jew, which is what I would consider myself to be, is going to say, I'm living on an edge. I'm living on an edge. I'm willing to look at an outside society and say there are things within that society which I believe can benefit me and can benefit my children, but at the same time, I am not going to let in those things which cannot, which is a much harder way of living, which is why lots of young people are not choosing that life. They're either going to one extreme or the other, because living on the edge is a very tough way to live. Personally, I think that's what Abram's preaching, but that's a whole discussion. So what you see here, as I said, is that Avram is coming full circle. The Lech Lecha, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised to him and told him and challenged him to achieve, he achieves towards the end of his life of his own volition, without being instructed. And he stands firm. And that's, by the way, why it changes from give me the property to buying the property. Because once he sees what B'nai Chay say, first he says, Tenuli. Now that could mean, you know, give it to me. But once he sees how B'nai Chay are going to interpret that and how they're going to deal with that, he says, I want to buy it. And he insists on buying it, and that he draws his line at that particular point. Now, this sets the stage for a lot of what we're going to be talking about throughout the year, because I believe that we keep returning to this Ger Vitoshav concept throughout the Torah. You see it, for example, and we'll talk about it more, and you can, when B'nai Israel come down to Egypt, and how Yosef, who is the most cosmopolitan Jew in the entire Torah, right? Think about it. Yosef is the cosmopolitan Jew. He's the Jew that you know, and again, I take it back. He's not a Jew. There are no Jews, right? There are no Jews until a nation is formed at Har Sinai. Mm-hmm. And even then, we're not called Jews because Jews is a terminology that's used from Yehuda and the kingdom of Yehuda. But Yosef, who is the most cosmopolitan Jew, because he rises, he becomes an Egyptian, right? When he coaches his brothers concerning their interface with Paro, what does he say? What does he tell them to do? Say we're shepherds. Why? Because it says, and he says it directly, because the Egyptians hate shepherds. Not a good way to win friends and influence people, is it? I'm coming down to a new community. I'm gonna deliberately tell you something that's gonna push me away from you. But Yosef, and for whatever reason, we could argue this at length. Maybe Yosef sees the cost of his own journey. What's that cost? Cost is that when his brothers see him, they don't, because he's not recognizable. That's the cost. The cost is that I've assimilated too much. Perhaps he sees that. Perhaps he sees, and we'll talk about this when we get there, that living in that culture is very dangerous, and it's living on a tightrope. Perhaps he thinks, look, I was able to accomplish maintaining my identity, but all of you as a whole may not be as strong as me. But what he does is Yosef, the most cosmopolitan Jew, orchestrates the first ghetto in Jewish history. Orchestrates the first ghetto in Jewish history. He basically says, you know, tell them that you are that you're shepherds, so that you'll live separately in Goshen. He says it outright. But what's fascinating is that when the brothers talk to Paro, they start off by saying "Lagur ba'aretz banu," right? So what's that phrase mean? New, temporary. Viata na yeshvu, I think it is, or neshev avodecho be'aretz goshen, and they change the word from lagur to lashevet. So why? One answer might be because they don't want to insult Paro. But a better answer, I think, is it shows their ambivalence. They see Egypt. They see its power. They see its strength. So maybe we're not here so temporarily. And at the end of Parshas Vayigash, when it describes B'nai Yisrael living, it says, Vayeshu Be'eretz Goshen, Be'eretz Mitzrayim, Be'eretz Goshen. Not just Be'eretz Goshen, but in Mitzrayim. Vayachazuba, and it goes out of its way to say, we're here. And what happens is they settle permanently, and that partially leads to the destruction that's going to come. So you see that transition. Read the Torah carefully. If there's anything we learn together in this year, is read the Torah carefully and read the words carefully. Don't go straight to Medrash. Read the Pshat. And the brilliance that comes from the Pshat is reflected in these kinds of studies. Right. Territory. Right. We don't think it is, but yeah. Right. Look, there is. We could talk about this ad infinitum. There is no question that part of what the Torah sets up is the dispute we see unfolding here now, right? Which is the dispute of now. I especially when the Palestinians claim to be the Canaanites, then it even becomes a whole another dispute. But that's the issue is that we believe God gave us the land, as you say, the covenantal. Others will believe their tradition, and now whoever has the biggest fire in their belly is going to win, which is a frightening thing when you think about it on a practical level. All right, I'll take two more questions. Yes? That's correct. I didn't know she used that line, but I've used it as well. We are a part of and apart from at every point. And yes, Ger V'Toshav, as I said, is the best sociological. If you were to ask Avram, define what we're going to be across history, that is exactly what we're going to be. All right, so again, and now, let's just finally bring this full circle. What's the difference between Lot and Avram? So clear, right? Lot goes into a society that Avram wouldn't even go into. And what we see happening to Lot is a whittling away of what should be the balance, creating an aberration that creates that kind of behavior, because in that society and in that environment, you can't retain your Ger V'Toshav. You can't retain it. And you see Avraham living in the Hittite society, defining himself from the outset, publicly doing that and insisting on retaining it in the face of pressure not to. And what does this mean for us? And this is the final comment for today. It's that we ourselves, are faced with all of these challenges. From Lo, we learn that there are things that we can't let into our homes. That there are things we cannot allow to enter our homes. There are things we cannot allow to enter our lives. There are things that our children and grandchildren can see at the push of a button today, right? That we have to be vigilant to ensure, because you cannot remain unchanged, right? And where that line is drawn, that's your challenge. You have to decide that. Everybody has to decide that for themselves. But there are things that we can't allow. And then, at the same time, we have to understand that we live in a society and we have to create the Ger V'Toshav balance in our own lives. And where you draw that line and how you define that balance for yourselves, for your children, for your grandchildren, determines the Judaism that you express, but it's a constant balance. And it's a constant war to maintain that balance even in a society that is not Sodom, even in a society, particularly in our day, where so much invades our boundaries. Okay, yes, one last comment? Okay. All right, good. Another point is that even when we try to be part, that we're shut down. Anyway, okay, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much. Have a good day.